Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. How you doing tonight, Aaron? And I want a truthful answer from you.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there.
Well, you have had better days. What happened to you today?
It was just a trip to the emergency room, though. I'm okay, though.
Just a trip to the emergency room. Okay.
Right. No, we'll just leave it at this. I had some surgery recently, and then the pain medication I was taking caused a pretty big drop in blood pressure while I was in the shower, and I collapsed.
That's not good, man.
Yeah. So now we're recording the same evening.
Yeah. This is like
the evening of my accident.
8 hours later-ish, you were home at like, what, 1 or 2 o'clock from the hospital?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I got home at 1:30.
What are we talking about tonight?
One of the types of cases that we really like to cover are mysteries. The subject of tonight's episode is probably one of the biggest mysteries that you and I have come across in the history of the show. And it concerns the mysterious death of Sergeant Sean Drenth.
And Sean Drenth was found October 18th, 2010, next to his patrol car in a dead-end alley with his shotgun on him and his service weapon thrown over a fence and a backup revolver at his side. Some say suicide, some say murder. And once we get into the details, you'll kind of understand how it's not that simple. So Sean Drenth, he met his wife at a very young age. And by the time he was 21, he told his wife that he wanted to apply to be a police officer. And she didn't really want him to do that at first. But he did, and he was one of the youngest people on the force at the time, and he took to it very well. They say that he was just a monster police officer. Like, he was a cop's cop. He just lived and breathed being a law enforcement officer. He was very good at it. Not only was he just a cop, he took all the extra training that they don't pay for, you know, when it comes to tactical firearms training, to defensive driving pursuits, things like that. He did all these things. So kind of a super cop, really an icon of the force that he was in. And he did all these things on his own. He ended up becoming a firearms trainer himself. And he had 13 years on the force. He was a funny guy, too. He had a lot of friends on the force and outside of the force. He played in a band with a couple of his friends. One of them was a cop for 17 years. The other one, not. He had a sense of humor. And that's something that a lot of people forget is police are people too, and they have hobbies outside of work, and they do things. And Sean was really a normal guy. Him and his wife, Colleen, were very close. They had a daughter. Whenever you're that close to somebody and something tragic happens, it's hard for you to accept that they would kill themselves, especially if they were happy. On this night that the event happened, he went out on patrol. It was a 10-hour shift. He started at around 2 p.m. Nothing out of the ordinary. Went to visit his friend, a fellow police officer, who happened to be doing a security gig at a homeless shelter. And his name is Officer Lentz. And he went there, but they couldn't hang out because there was a barricade call, which means somebody's barricaded themselves in their home. They don't know if they're doing something bad or if they're going to kill themselves. So Lentz couldn't talk to Sean. And so Sean came back at 8:50 p.m. at night, and he hung out with Lentz for about 40 minutes. And then he took off, and he called his wife, and they had a very normal conversation. And during this conversation, Colleen even asked him, "I'm at the store. Is there anything you want?" And he said, "Yeah, chocolate pudding." Because who doesn't want chocolate pudding, right? That's what I would say. So that was at 9:59. From 10 o'clock to 10:25, it's pretty much radio silence for Sean. And at 10:25, there's a security camera that catches Sean's car going through a parking lot towards this kind of dead-end alley that's a V-shaped alley with a two chain-link fence. And what the cops would typically do is they would fill out their police reports and just kind of take a breather or a break here, because they could back their car up into this alley, and their six behind them and their sides were covered by this fence, so nobody could come at them, and they would be facing forward, you know, the opening of the alleyway. So it was sort of a tactical place where they could go, and it was a quiet place they could go. So they'd back into this alleyway and do their police work, and they wouldn't have to pay that much attention to their surroundings because nobody was around. So at 10:25, you see Sean's patrol car going through this area. And at 10:25, he also pushed on his computer control panel a suspect stop. It was never filled out. So as he's pulling into this alleyway, he's pulling up his computer to do a suspect stop.
So let's clarify this. Normally, the officers would back in so that they could view from the front the alley entering into this dead end. Only he doesn't do that. He pulls straight in.
Yeah.
And he apparently hits the screen of his computer so that he can enter in details of a suspect, someone he sees, only he doesn't fill that out.
No.
So this is already a little odd.
So there's a security guard. His name is Steve Vernier.
We'll just say Vernier.
Yeah. And there's a call out saying that there's an officer that hasn't responded, lost radio contact. Steve hears this, but Steve's doing an unarmed security job in the general area. But he is paying attention to police broadcasts over the radio. So he just keeps his eye out. He's not going to where he thinks Sean is, but he is aware that this is happening. And he comes up to the alley, and he sees a patrol car, and it's running. Both of the doors are open. And so he pulls up behind it, but giving himself a little bit of distance. So he's sort of in the mouth of the alleyway, and he gets out, and he knows that you don't sneak up on police officers. So he gets out of his patrol car and he starts yelling out, "Hello, anyone there?" And he doesn't get any response. So he walks up closer and he sees a uniformed officer laying on the ground in what appears to be blood, but it's dark, it's nighttime, and the headlights of Sean's patrol car are not on. So he can't see a lot with his flashlight. So he calls in and says, "One of yours has been shot," to the Phoenix Police Department. And this gets attention because now a code 999 goes out, which is officer down. And that pretty much kicks the hornet nest. And now you have the entire police department coming down to see what's going on, what they can do.
Right. One of their brothers has apparently gone down. And so the concern is department wide.
So that's at 10:56 p.m. So it's about a 25-30 minute period that is sort of unaccounted for. And we're not sure at what point Sean was killed. His friend Lentz and Swick are some of the first ones on the scene. Lentz sees that the patrol car is running and he actually goes over to it. He says that he hits the computer screen to see what the last thing was, hoping that it was some sort of message. And that's when he notices the suspect screen was up. And he says he turns the car off, pulls the keys out. And then he would go on to check the trunk also. The first guy on the scene, Clark?
Yeah, Clark was the first one to actually approach Drenth's body.
So it was Clark and then Lentz and Swick. Clark says it looked fishy. It looked wrong.
It was the position of the shotgun, I think, that really got him thinking that way. He just didn't think if you shot yourself with a shotgun, that the shotgun would be so neatly placed along the center of your chest.
Yeah. So
towards his head.
Yeah. So they find Sean laying flat on his back, his legs straight out, and his shotgun neatly positioned in a, you know, a vertical,
right, vertically aligned towards his head.
Down the center of his chest, and the butt of the shotgun's down by his waist. It does look almost staged.
And we all know, well, anybody that's fired a shotgun or watched a shotgun go off knows that there's quite a bit of recoil on those things. So if you were to commit suicide with a shotgun, placing it underneath your chin in a what could be a kneeling position.
Or a standing position.
Or a standing position, you would think that as soon as that shotgun went off and the shot went up into your head, that you would let go of that shotgun and there's no way it would find itself neatly placed on the center of your chest like that, the way it was discovered.
Yeah. You're pretty much dying instantly, and you're letting go of the shotgun. The shotgun did have a sling on it, but still, if he's taking a shotgun blast and falling over, the chances of the shotgun staying in that position, it just seems odd or unlikely.
You would think it could have ended up in any number of positions, but it's just, this is a red flag for us or for anybody reading up on this case or even for the investigators. So at this point, you're thinking it had to be murder.
Yeah. Somebody killed him. So other objects that they find at this scene are Sean's handcuffs are on the ground next to the patrol car. His flashlight is next to the handcuffs. His Glock service weapon has been tossed over one of the chain link fences, and his backup revolver is laying next to his body, and it appears it has been fired through the chain link fence and into a, looks like a wall of a warehouse. It's like a sheet metal wall.
They did recover that bullet, and the weapon had originally been stored in a holster on his ankle. It's a backup weapon.
Yeah.
And Sean had told fellow officers, other people, that if he ever had to pull that gun, that something was going down.
He was having a bad day.
Yeah, that he was having a bad day. So,
also, as you stated, the patrol car was pulled into the alleyway, the front of the car in, which wasn't normal practice. And both of the doors are wide open, appearing that either A, somebody was riding with Sean and got out of the patrol car, or B, went into the patrol car to retrieve the shotgun. But both of the doors were wide open, which is what keyed the security guard off right away that something was wrong here.
And of course, the engine was running when the security guard arrived.
At this point, it's full red alert. What was it? Like over 100 police officers responded to this. They have over 50 at the actual scene. The lead homicide detective, Lieutenant Joe Knott, kind of pissed off because now you have 50 plus cops at the scene. They have not secured the crime scene. So they're going to have to try to vet all those footprints, all those fingerprints, all this DNA. He said it was chaos. He just calls it chaos. But they do make an attempt to find all the boot prints that were in the, it's asphalt, but it's really dusty and covered with dirt and stuff. So there are footprints everywhere. So they try to vet all the boot prints of all the people that are on the scene, and they say they have. And there are a few questionable things that they're unable to account for. And there is a footprint in the floorboard of the passenger side of the police vehicle. And there's a footprint on a notebook too. And this tread pattern, they can't tie to anyone's boot there. I think you had over 50 people there trumping around this crime scene. It's completely tainted. How can you say this? But I know they do due diligence to check everyone's boot print, you know, shoe print. But this is kind of like, did they know who all was there, who left already? Like, I don't know. I don't know how well that system, that process worked in this case. Typically, they can account for all these boot prints. So there is a unknown boot print within Sean's vehicle and on a notebook. So possibly an additional suspect here, possible murder suspect here. They also have found fingerprints. It was like 92 fingerprints that they found on his car and on different things. They were able to identify most of those. They did find DNA at the scene, but we'll get into that later. They would have to get DNA swabs from all the police officers, and some of those officers weren't cool with that. So that's the thing, is if you can't vet the DNA, then now you don't know. And also, all these officers were on the scene. How can you say when this DNA was, you know, deposited? Was it there before? Was it there after? There's no way to really tell. So crime scene, in my eyes, is contaminated, and you can't do much with it. I don't know. What do you think of the crime scene?
Well, there are too many officers that show up. And obviously it's out of concern. This is one of their brothers that has fallen, but it just doesn't seem right. They should treat this crime scene as if just some public citizen had been shot and be careful about who goes where. If they really want to solve this crime, you can't have that many people going through and touching things and messing with the crime scene. They also had officers who didn't want to give up their DNA samples. These officers were asked for saliva swabs, and five of them refused. And so they had to go and get a court order.
A warrant.
And they reluctantly did so. Then three of them sued, and they sued for like a dollar, but they also demanded that the saliva samples, the DNA, be destroyed and not held on record.
Yeah.
Which... how do you feel about that, Justin? It seems a little strange, right? At least to a common citizen, it seems a little bit strange that they would be so concerned about their DNA being on file.
It's one of those arguments of, well, if you didn't do anything wrong, then you have nothing to hide. But at the same time, I don't know if I want my DNA and fingerprints on file. Like, if I was suspected in a crime and I complied and gave my DNA sample and my fingerprints and I was cleared, do I want that hanging around in a database? I kind of don't.
No, I get it from the privacy end. I'm just a little confused since authority figures who are telling you, hey, if you didn't do anything wrong, you have nothing to fear.
Mm-hmm. And one of their officers could have been murdered. You would think they would want to do everything they can to help. And
it just goes to show that the police are no different than common citizens when it comes to these matters because they have the same concerns.
Yeah, they do. And again, it's they're no difference.
Like, why are you looking at me?
Yeah, like I'm the guy that's enforcing the laws, not the one breaking them. So Clark was the first guy on the scene, and he says it looks staged because of the position of the shotgun. Now, when they were taking statements from the first responders on the scene, Lentz and Swick say the position of the shotgun, the barrel was down, facing down towards his leg, and it was across his chest. So
it was slung across his body at an angle.
Yeah.
With the barrel down.
Kind of make more sense, maybe, if it was suicide. Here we are. We have two officers saying the position of the shotgun was different than how they record the crime scene, which is pointing under his chin. So that's a little odd, a little discrepancy here.
That's a big discrepancy. I mean, if you think about it, the positioning of the shotgun matters because this might tell us whether it was suicide or whether it was murder.
Exactly.
And you have police disagreeing with other police on this. It's not like they're in a room shouting at each other. This is just looking at their statements and saying, wait a minute, these don't line up. And furthermore, when the crime scene's being investigated, the shotgun is not in the position that Lentz and Swick say it is.
Yeah.
It's in a different position. It's
up and down, not down up.
That's such a big discrepancy that you have to wonder, how did two officers make the same mistake if it was? Or are they lying?
Mm-hmm. So,
and what's their motivation?
Yeah, exactly. We'll get to motivations here in a little bit. We won't jump ahead. Also, they said in order for the shotgun to be in the position it was and for him to have shot himself this way without suffering as much recoil, some people say, well, he had to have been laying on his back the way you found him. But we know that's not true because the brain matter was not on the ground behind him or on the ground at all. It was actually up in a tree.
It was 12 feet to the northeast.
Which would suggest that he was either standing or kneeling with the shotgun under his chin in an upward direction. And then he would fall back flat on his back. Which
I can get it if he's standing. If he's kneeling, I don't know about that.
Maybe he could fall that way if he was standing, yes. But kneeling, no. His legs would be crooked or not straight. Every single one of these details is a little odd, and you could kind of argue over it all night. So we'll just keep going. No fingerprints were found on the shotgun, not even Sean's. If it's murder, then the murderer was wearing gloves. If it's suicide, then he just happened to not leave any prints. That does happen. Or usable prints, really. And that's the distinguishing mark there is usable prints. So take that how you will. We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY.
ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
The detective assigned to the case was Detective Brewer. His initial gut reaction was, this is a suicide. He shot himself. Now, police suicides do happen, and they happen a lot. Police officers actually shoot themselves disproportionately compared to any other group. PTSD, depression, these are all things that police officers in the line of duty suffer from at an alarming rate. And it's not spoken about too much, and I think it should be. I think that police unions and police departments should have a lot of support models for them. But it seems to be, at least in some departments, not all, it seems to be kind of an unsaid thing, or they don't talk about it, they don't speak about it. So in certain cases, police officers might feel like they're alone or helpless, and this is their only solution. Now, in the Phoenix Police Department, Brewer made the statement, I've never seen a police officer commit suicide while on duty. They would always do it while they're off duty, when they're at home, on their day off, or something. And whether this be just by chance, or if these police officers actually just had enough loyalty to their job that they would never want to have somebody else have to pick up their work or have to come to them on a call, whatever the case may be, they don't commit suicide while they're on duty. It's a odd circumstance if Sean did commit suicide while he was on duty, especially when everything during the day seemed relatively normal and he had just spoken to his wife and his friend.
Yeah, when he was hanging out with Lentz, they say they were joking around and having a good time.
Yeah, nothing odd.
So let's lay that out real quick. You have a guy who seems very happy. He's known to be the guy that keeps everyone entertained. He's very good at his job. He's the kind of officer they say that someone who would be out to harm him would have a difficult time with, because he's very aware of his surroundings. He's a very good shot. This is not the kind of guy that could be surprised. They just don't think so. As you described him earlier, he seems to be a type of super cop, a guy that's just really good and passionate about his job. So now we have to start getting into the questions of how this would work, whether it's suicide or whether it's a murder.
Let's just start with the suicide angle. So what would cause Sean to go that route?
When we get into the question of, did he commit suicide? It reminds me of this quote by Robin Williams. And I don't know necessarily if it's his quote, but I see it associated with his image a lot online. And it goes like this. Everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. Be kind always. And this is something about depression is not everyone who has depression lets others know that they're suffering from it. Some people are very good at hiding it. It's those times when they're by themselves that it's getting to them and you're not there. You're not aware of it. So even if Sean Drenth is out with a friend and they're laughing it up and enjoying their time together, it doesn't mean that within an hour he's not depressed again or dealing with something that's really dark that no one else knows about. It's quite possible.
I mean, if he's the cop's cop, eats, lives, breathes being a cop and is a super cop, well, it's kind of a sign of weakness to a lot of more masculine men to talk about how you're depressed or your feelings when it's not a weakness. It's you have a problem and you should reach out. So is that the case here? I don't know. But us guys, we all know that we don't talk about our feelings or our problems a lot because that's just not what guys do typically. And we should, but we just don't. And especially more alpha male type men. I would say Sean absolutely was that.
So what might make him depressed? Now, obviously, some people have a chemical imbalance that can cause them to be depressed. I mean, there are so many different ways that you could become depressed. Now, he did have something going on in his life that perhaps many people didn't know about. What was that, Justin?
He was actually going to be indicted for theft, but it was pretty much embezzlement. And that sounds bad, and not that I want to condone anyone's actions, but Sean, his friend George Contreras, and another officer, Lentz, were doing side work, like security work, pretty much be a security guard somewhere, and they would get paid a certain amount. And Contreras, his good friend, who had been a police officer for 17 years, and they had a band together and all these things, had kind of orchestrated this contract with this other business for them to do security work there. Well, there were allegations that they were showing up late and leaving early, but still claiming 40 hours or padding their hours for more. And one, sadly, at every single job I've ever had in my life, I've had coworkers that have done this. I didn't really consider it embezzlement until we were researching this case. And I do understand that you are stealing from your company, but I never thought of it as that big of a deal because people would just be like, well, it's 4:45 and I'm going to just go ahead and say I left at 5. But after time, you are taking from your employer. I think all in all, the total amount of money that they said that Sean could have embezzled or padded was about $1,036. So that's like not even a full paycheck. But still, it's a serious thing. And him and fellow officers were being indicted for it. It appears that they were really trying to go after his friend Contreras and not Sean, because he was the one that was more of the ringleader or the kingpin or whatever terminology they used. But all of them were under investigation. And a friend of Sean's, his name was Chris Moore. He had information about the indictment that was coming, or he was privy to it. And, you know, when you talk about cops and prosecutors and everything, all these guys have to work together. So if one of them's under investigation, it's really kind of hard to keep that a secret. I'm sure that Sean, by way of the grapevine, figured out that this was something. And a lot of his friends and family said, oh yeah, he talked about it and he acted like it wasn't a big deal. And it kind of doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but it carried a felony charge. And if he's charged with a felony, he's not a cop anymore. So even if you don't think it's that big of a deal, even if you don't think that the punishment of, well, maybe he has to pay the money back or whatever. But when you look at the domino effect of if he's charged with this and he loses his job and he can no longer be a cop, now you're talking about super cop losing his job. that could destroy this man and put him into a downward spiral. Nobody says that he appeared that way, but that actually could be a huge factor in this situation.
Aside from what's described as a great marriage, a great family, he has this career as a police officer. And if that's on the line, if that looks like it might be pulled from him, we don't understand just how important that might be or just how devastating that might be, what kind of effect that might have on his psyche. So from that angle, I would say it's definitely a possibility that that could drive him to commit suicide. It has to be at least considered.
I know that if any of his friends and family are listening right now, you're shaking your heads and saying, no, he was absolutely 100% happy and confident, and this is not the type of person that would have done this.
And that he wouldn't leave Colleen and his child behind.
Yeah. You know what? I've experienced people taking their lives around me. I have friends that have friends and family that have taken their own lives. It's always a surprise. It never really seems like, oh, I was expecting that. No, if there's multiple suicide attempts, then maybe, yeah, you expect it. But that first time is usually a surprise. People can cover up their emotions pretty well. Not saying that that alone makes me think this guy committed suicide, but an indictment that could possibly destroy his career could have been a factor.
Okay, we need to take a short break here. Who would like to win a $100 Amazon gift card? Well, if you take our survey, you'll be entered to win one. We're looking for new advertisers, and they're looking to see who makes up our audience. So if you can take about 5 minutes out of your day and fill out the survey, it'll ask you some questions. And then at the end, you can add your email address for a chance to win the gift card. So please head out to podsurvey.com/GenY. That's GENWHY. The address again, podsurvey.com/GenY. Thank you. Okay, so could be a suicide, but what if it's murder? We already spoke about how there's an unidentified shoe print on the notebook. Both doors were open.
The position of the shotgun's wonky.
Well, the screen had been moved to the enter a suspect's details section. The shotgun placement on the body seems unlikely. His ankle gun had been fired. When it had been fired, they say it had been fired in the direction of where his service gun was thrown. And then also at the scene, they say there were signs of a struggle on the ground.
He had dirt on his chest, like dirt and pieces of grass and stuff on his uniform. And his knuckles were bruised up and scratched up.
So maybe there was a struggle. Maybe someone was with him in the vehicle. After all, he didn't back in like normal. He pulled in. Other officers said the only way that you would pull in that way is if you were meeting another officer, because then someone else would be watching your six. Why was he pulled in that way? Now, we're not saying he was meeting an officer. We have no idea. He may have pulled up, thought maybe there was something suspicious and started tapping in, and then realized he recognized the person who may or may not have been a cop, and then stopped there. And also, if he was meeting someone he knew or ran into someone he knew there, then he wouldn't be as on alert as he would be if he ran into someone else that he didn't know.
Exactly. And being the veteran level of officer he was, I find it hard to think that somebody could get the drop on him. I find it hard to believe that somebody could get his service weapon away from him, evade his backup weapon shot, and then somehow get the shotgun under his chin and pull the trigger. It seems like a lot to swallow when you think about the situation and the circumstance of his, you know, the position of his body and the position of the weapons. He wouldn't have done this voluntarily if he was fighting for his life. And if it was multiple people, well, possibly one could have had a gun on him and the other one did this, but I don't think anyone's getting the drop on Sean, and his level of experience and level of weapons experience. I think if somebody murdered him, it was somebody he knew, somebody that could get close to him. If it's somebody close to him that he knows and loves, he might hesitate on pulling the trigger against them. He might not have that same training reinforcement of escalate to lethal force and eliminate the threat, because that threat is somebody he knows.
Or knows and trusts.
Exactly.
If he did pull out his ankle gun to shoot, mm-hmm. that to me says, well, one, if someone threw the gun over the fence, which is his primary service weapon, which was a Glock,
yeah.
if they threw that over the fence and they didn't get his ankle gun off of him, did they not know he had one? Which would imply that they weren't a police officer, didn't know anything about police officers, or how was he allowed to get to that gun and at least shoot it once? So for me, that's kind of suspicious. If there really was a scuffle and a shot was fired off from that ankle gun, and then suddenly he now has a shotgun under his chin, how does that happen?
Yeah. And why would somebody murder him that way?
Right. They say it would be easier if you're just going to murder him. There's a Glock, and then there's the revolver that was on his ankle. You have your choice right there of at least one of those that you could have killed him with. Or you could have brought a gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why use the shotgun from the car? One of the interesting questions that was brought up about this case was, supposedly he had told Lentz that if you're going to kill yourself, you'd have to put the gun underneath your chin and make sure the shot went through your brain.
Yeah, because the conversation was something to the effect of, you know, you put the barrel in your mouth and you pull the trigger. It was graphic, but you could survive that shot if your gun is just shoots a hole out the back of your head. It could potentially miss your brain. So Sean says, no, you have to point it in an upward direction. That's just how you do it. Now, is this dark foreshadowing, or is this, most people know that that's just how you hold the weapon? I mean, you said that you read a Stephen King novel where that was the whole thing. Is the guy?
Well, it was a short story in one of his collections, and it was all about that. There are some people in this case who are seemingly suspicious. We talked about how he was going to be indicted, and the others in the case are Contreras and Lentz. Now, Lentz, when he shows up at the scene, he says that he saw the shotgun in a different position. Now, Contreras, when he's interviewed, he says that he had handled that ankle gun 2 days prior to Drent's death.
He says that he handled it because he saw it. He asked Sean about it, and Sean said, this is what kind of gun it is, and this is why I keep it on my ankle. It's my backup, and if I have to pull it, I'm having a bad day. And Contreras said, well, I want one of those. Like, he was interested in it.
So he started handling the gun. Contreras, before even Drent's family is notified about the death, posts something to Facebook. He types, Sergeant Sean Drent, may you rock out in heaven. I love you. This is before anyone can be notified in the family that Drent has died.
Yeah. And when Contreras was asked, hey, Sean's dead and we're not sure if it was suicide or murder, Contreras says, oh, he was absolutely murdered. All those cops are corrupt and 90% of them could have done it, or something to that effect. Remember, Contreras was under indictment, and as soon as that investigation kind of happened, he quit or retired from the force abruptly. He was a cop for 17 years, and he leaves the force as soon as this indictment and investigation happens. But again, they all say that the investigation was bogus and the charges would be dropped and there was nothing to it. And I kind of agree with them. Like, how do you really nail them for padding hours on a patrol shift? If you're not using a time card clocking in, it's really hard to say, were they there at this time or not, unless you have security cameras all over the place, which they don't. They didn't seem to take this indictment thing very seriously, but at the same time, he retires. He's out of the police force at this point. And he seems to believe that Sean was murdered. And he doesn't believe the suicide angle. But, okay, so Sean either commits suicide because this indictment thing was going to destroy his life, or Sean was murdered possibly because of this indictment, if we're going to tie it to that.
Or so, at least the people involved in the indictment. That's yeah. another possibility, because there may be something else going on that we're not aware of where there's a falling out here.
Yeah.
Now, Drenth had stopped performing with the band sometime before this.
They said it was musical differences.
They say that. They say Drenth was more into more of the metal side, and Contreras was more into the rock and roll side. This is a common thing with bands and bandmates.
I like Drenth better already.
but there could be more to the story that we're not aware of. Drenth could have had another issue with any number of people or others. Contreras even says that he believes it was a hit, and that it would have taken 3 or 4 other people to subdue him.
It might have taken more.
Let's put it this way. If he really is such a tough, capable officer, then yes, maybe it did require multiple people to pull this off.
Contreras even theorized it was a border issue, because they are in Phoenix. They are down by the Mexican border. So there could be wheeling and dealing with drug smugglers, drug dealers, border patrol agents. It's a vague insinuation that can let your imagination run wild. We don't know. The police chief says either this was a suicide made to look like a homicide, or this was a homicide made to look like a suicide. And I think that's an accurate description, because if this is a suicide, what's with all the doors being opened, the guns being thrown around, a shot being fired, scuff marks on his hands, and a shotgun in a weirdly placed position? It would look like it was staged. Like, I'm going to make it look like a struggle happened, so it looks like a homicide. Now, why would a police officer want to kill themselves and make it look like they were murdered?
Or in addition, if the shotgun was moved later by another officer, not saying it was, but if it were, why would it happen that way if there was nothing really criminal about this?
Yeah.
And it would be, I would think, because his widow would be up for benefits, but I believe in the line of duty death, where he is killed as a result of doing his job, would give her more benefits.
Yeah, she gets $350,000 and 3 years of salary. It's a decent amount of money.
He could be looking out for Colleen.
Yeah.
And his child.
So if you die because you've been killed or injured or by accident, whatever, she gets full benefits. If you commit suicide, it's either reduced or no benefits. Again, going back to police officer suicides, they're probably underreported because cops and pathologists work together and they say, hey, mark this as unknown. Mark this as, you know, something else besides suicide. Because if you mark it as suicide, you're denying all the benefits to the family. And there's records of pathologists working with cops to make sure families get these full benefits.
And these are decisions of the heart. Let's clear that up. I mean, you might say this sounds wrong, but this isn't being done for some terrible reason, for some unethical reason. This is being done to try and help out those left behind.
And to be honest, I don't think you should deny the family pensions or benefits if the police officer committed suicide. I don't agree with them denying benefits or giving them reduced benefits. Like, they were a police officer at that time when they died. And I don't think the cause of death should matter for payout.
It's almost like a shame thing. Like, oh, wow, look how you died. How dare you? So now your family's screwed. Sorry.
I don't agree with that. And being that their suicide rate is high, I really don't agree with that because I don't know. It just seems wrong to me. So if it was suicide, then Sean has the forethought to make it look like a murder, but then his buddies show up and say, well, that's not how the shotgun was. It was in a different position, which would dictate homicide and not suicide. But everyone else sees the shotgun under the chin, what would be more in line with suicide. So there's that. Maybe they're covering for him.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Or there's something suspicious with it where someone may have moved it or misreported it. Either way you look at it, something is off about the shotgun completely.
Going back to homicide now, because I find issues with suicide here. You have Contreras saying that all these cops are corrupt. You have the doors are both open, unidentified footprints. You have cops that don't want to give out their DNA to be vetted. I don't know that much about the Phoenix Police Department. I don't know if the entire department's been under investigation or anything, but I just wouldn't think that cops would kill cops or somebody he knew would go this far. But I don't think this was a random person or just a stranger danger kind of somebody got the drop on him. So it would have to be somebody he knew. And why would they do it? What's their motivation? And why would they want to make it look like a suicide so they wouldn't be investigated, right? Like, okay, this is a suicide, so now I just got away with murder. But what's their motivation?
Well, there is a possible witness to the event. There was a homeless man who was about 150 feet away from the alley. He was to the south, and he heard two shots fired a little bit apart. He said one was loud, and then within 15 seconds, a more muffled shot was fired.
It was muffled like somebody was, you know, under a pillow or something, which obviously that might have been the shotgun.
Being underneath his chin.
Yeah.
But what I find interesting is that he describes hearing these shots. But what I find more interesting is the fact that he never heard anybody talking.
No.
He didn't report hearing people yell.
Or any sort of scuffle or altercation.
You would think that he would hear something. In other words, if there was a scuffle, and let's just say for the sake of argument, you know, we can talk about Drent's capabilities, but he's not the only capable person on the planet. I mean, and there are probably other capable people he knows himself.
Absolutely.
So is it impossible that someone got Drent down, that they overpowered him? I think it's quite possible. But I would think if there was a struggle going on, there would be shouting. I would assume so.
Yeah.
And I mean, do people really operate quietly when they're doing this? I mean, possibly.
It's possible.
This man, Thomas Keeler, he doesn't report hearing voices. In my mind, this kind of points back to suicide again. And I would say this, if Sean's trying to commit suicide, but perhaps wants to leave it questionable so that his widow can get the most support financially, the most benefits, then he would want to make it look weird. Mm-hmm. And he can do that by pulling his ankle gun and shooting it.
Opening both car doors of the patrol car, throwing his service weapon over the fence, shooting his gun. But we're back to how he was found and how the shotgun was positioned.
Well, if you remember, we had another case where a rifle was moved.
Mm-hmm.
And they know it was moved because it was recorded in one position when it was first identified. It was recorded.
Yeah.
And then they marched through a bunch of trainees from the department. And then all of a sudden, it's in a different position. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that this shotgun may have been in a different position originally, just as Lent said, just as Swick said, and then it was moved. Why it was moved, if it was a mistake, who's going to own up to that? Yeah. Now you're tampering with the crime scene.
Yeah.
But whoever moved it, if it was moved, they obviously didn't handle it in a way that would have left their fingerprints. All I can say is that this would be the key. If he did commit suicide, someone moved the shotgun.
Yeah.
And that Sean really tried to make this questionable so that his widow and his child would be better off, at least financially, than they would have if it was a simple suicide.
I just go back to, it looks more like a suicide because of the position of the shotgun. Whether or not the shotgun could have been in that position because of recoil and all that and how he would have had to have fallen, it's questionable. But if you go back to the homicide angle, so this assailant was in the car with him and was able to get to the shotgun, was out of the car, went back to the car and got the shotgun. Like,
if there were multiple people there, though, if some were waiting there, remember, they said cops would often go by there and hang out there for a little bit, fill out reports, do whatever, take a breather, but they would back in. So if he pulled in, is it because he saw something? If you saw somebody and you didn't know who they were at first,
you're not
maybe
backing.
You would just pull in and hit that screen.
Yeah.
But what if he did it and then he saw someone he knew and stopped there and got out?
Yeah.
And what if there was more than one person there and they started to come around and then one of them went and got the shotgun? Now he's got a bunch of people to deal with.
Well, but the fact that they got the shotgun tells me that they're probably somebody that knows how to get that shotgun unlocked from a police car. I'm sure if you gave me enough time, I could probably get that shotgun out of there, but I don't know how to quick release it. I don't know how those things work. So it might be somebody with the knowledge of that.
So really, at the end of the day here, you and I are not sure.
No. I like Sean. Everything I've learned about the guy, I think he's got a really colorful personality. He's into metal, and he has kind of a vulgar sense of humor. There's a story about at his funeral, his friends giving a speech, and says he pulls out a wallet with Bad Mofo on it, and a lot of people at the funeral looked appalled because it was a very tasteless joke at a funeral. But if Sean's anything like me, that's funny.
Well, Sean's the one that came up with it.
Yeah,
I mean, didn't he give him the wallet?
Yeah. I'm like relating to this guy. I remember I was at our friend Adam's wedding and he asked me to speak, made some really innuendo jokes because his wife and I made really terrible jokes together. And I made some of those jokes in front of both families. And Adam knows me and his wife knows me and they laughed. Everyone else looked in utter horror as I repeated these, innuendos. So, that was me. It sounds like the guy had a very similar sense of humor. So it's really sad if he was in a state of depression and he didn't feel like he could reach out to people. Or it's horribly tragic if this man's been murdered and thus far it's been treated as a suicide. It was investigated more or less as a suicide. The initial investigator thought it was a suicide. The forensic pathologist said it was a suicide. He said all the autopsy reports appear to be suicide.
So within the department, there's a debate. There isn't an agreement here whether it was suicide or whether it was homicide. Possible link to this case involving the embezzlement charges. they don't believe that's tied to this.
Mm-hmm.
Say for those that are playing armchair detective, you could start scoring on each side. And I think you might, if you take everyone at their word, let's put it that way. If we just take everyone at their word.
And all the evidence is untainted.
I would say you'll end up with more on the suicide side, but not a lot, but a little bit more. But in the end, if it was tainted, it could be for a good reason. There could be a motive here to help Sean's family.
But his widow and his friends think he was absolutely murdered.
Right. I don't think they're in on it. I don't think they're sitting around going, we have to say he was murdered so we can get more money. No, they really believe that this man that they've known for all these years would not have committed suicide, and that the evidence from his hands, on his shirt, from his ankle gun being fired, that, you know, this all lines up with he was murdered.
Yeah, he was having a struggle. He was defending himself.
But again, that's where, if we go by this homeless man, he doesn't report hearing voices. He doesn't report hearing anything. And I would think if there was a struggle, there should have been, unless they knew to be quiet. I mean, I guess I don't know how to say that, but however this went down, we weren't there. So this is what we find fascinating about the case is, as you read about it, it's just sort of like The Staircase, the second case we ever covered. As you go through it, you could flip-flop here or there. You might have an overriding kind of lean, but really, as you go through it, you can go back and forth.
I went into this thinking suicide, knee-jerk reaction to the crime scene, also knowing the suicide stats with police officers. I just thought that's the simple explanation, and I'm going to go with it. And you told me that you started out more leaning murder. And by the time of recording, I think I was leaning more murder and you're leaning more suicide now. It's like,
I think really, in all fairness, I would say, I don't know. You could catch me on any day of the week and who knows what I would say. On a Tuesday, I might think more murder. Saturday, I might think suicide. And that's just how mysterious this case is.
I would hope that if one of the police officers did move evidence or did try to make it look like murder to make sure that the family and friends, you know, I would hope that they would tell them, hey, he probably did do this and we tried to help, but we just hurt the situation, and apologize to them or something if that was the case. But if they open their mouth, then their whole life and career could be over. So,
well, guardian angels, or what you might want to call them, don't always act and tell.
No.
There's a city somewhere in the United States where there's a man hiding $100 bills for people to find. He's not claiming anything right now. He's not out there going, oh, yeah, I'm helping you guys out. He's not saying anything. He's just doing it.
Yeah. And by the way, Colleen did get full benefits. So that's at least the good news out of this, is her and the child are financially taken care of, at least. But that doesn't ever fill the void of losing a father or a spouse. Still unsolved. It's still classified as unknown. The autopsy report says suicide, but the police department has not made a determination.
What about the case involving the embezzlement charges with Contreras and Lenz, since they're still around?
They ended up getting dropped, and then they came back, and I think they recharged one of them, and they pleaded no contest. But the initial indictment charges were dropped or thrown out. So maybe not quite as serious as people made it out to be.
So again, if it was suicide, we could say if he had something internal that he just couldn't deal with, then he could commit suicide. Or just the idea of losing his job, his career, the thing that he was so passionate about, that could drive him to suicide possibly. We don't know. Obviously, if Colleen were to hear this, she would have a different opinion because she knew Sean. But just as outsiders who are looking in saying, if it was suicide, what would motivate this man? Because honestly, I agree with some in the department who said they don't think that this is tied to the indictment. Mm-hmm. I just don't think so either. I know that his job could be on the line, but I would hate to think that he would commit suicide before he knew what was really going to happen. Because it really wasn't a lot of money. And as you said, it's kind of something that happens a lot. And you know, if he had stolen $30,000, that would be a little different, I think. I know that felony is a felony.
Yeah, anything over $500 or something's a felony.
Right, so. But when you're talking like $1,000, that's like stealing a few pennies here and there almost. I mean, so just to the average person, this doesn't seem as big a deal, I don't think. You could say it's a felony, but it's still a low amount of money. So how is this a motivator for him? I just personally don't see it. I think if that was a concern of his, I think he would have waited to see how it played out and then determine whether it really was the end for him. But also weighing in Colleen's statements and other statements from people that knew him, that he had such a great relationship with her. And you know how it is when there's a couple and they're that strong, I would think it would take something bigger than the loss of his career to make him end his own life.
And,
right?
And the fact that he gave no indication to her, she had no idea that there was a problem. Not even like, oh, he was having some trouble, he was drinking a lot, or nothing. This was out of the blue for her.
Well, and some people suffer in silence, or as you said, they don't want to share their pain, especially with someone they care about. He didn't want to share it with her, possibly. Again, we could do this all night with the suicide angle and with the homicide angle.
If it was suicide, I tie the indictment thing to it. If it was homicide, I don't think people are killing each other over that. If it was homicide, it was something else. So I know Contreras was a prime suspect or a person of interest in this.
Not officially.
No, but he knew that the eyes were on him, and he was really pissed about it. And I just thought, well, why would Contreras murder his friend and then, when asked about it, say he was absolutely murdered? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. If he murdered his friend and then they went and questioned him about it, I would just assume somebody would say, oh, yeah, he committed suicide. He was sad and depressed, and yeah, that all the facts look like suicide. That would be the natural diversion, distancing, lying tactic that somebody would want to do. Not saying, oh, yeah, I think he was murdered. Like, that's counterintuitive to me, but he was not happy that people were pointing the finger at him.
And this is what happens when someone dies under mysterious circumstances. We try to get in their head. We try to understand what could have happened.
Whether it be missing more Murray or any kind of thing, you try to get in their head. What were they thinking?
So I suppose we'll just leave this one to the audience, because I, for one, can't figure it out. So definitely read up on this case, listen to the episode a few times, and see if you can come up with your own theory on what happened to Sergeant Sean Drenth on October 18th, 2010. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours.
Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.